Thanks, Chris, very much for that. And our final presenter is Karen Baker, Associate Professor and Director of the Program on Water Governance at UBC.
Je voulais remercier les organisateurs parce que je pense que le dialogue qu'on entame ici pourra avoir des conséquences très importantes sur les questions de l'eau au Canada. Donc, merci et félicitations. So thanks very much to the organizers and congratulations. It's precisely this sort of dialogue that I think is necessary. As much as experts on water think they're repeating themselves, we need to be reaching the key constituents and get our message out. And this is what I think this sort of conference allows us to do. So thanks and congratulations to the organizers. Much of what I have to say you've heard in bits over the presentations that have been made up to this point at the conference. But I want to bring these various references to governance together and outline for you some of the key elements of the governance challenge we face with respect to water in Canada. My main argument is that in Canada, we have one of the weakest water governance frameworks in the developed world. This hinders our capacity to protect our water resources and even to assess whether our water is secure. The solutions I'll outline are pretty simple. We need to effectively regulate, adequately integrate, and we also need a new paradigm, a new vision of water governance, predicated on protecting water security, based on a notion of the importance of both ecosystem and human health. So to expand that claim, I'll begin maybe in an unusual place. This is Frederick Varley's iconic image of stormy weather in Georgian Bay, painted in 1921, now hanging in the National Gallery in Ottawa. This image and others like it are emblematic of our myths of water in Canada, pristine, abundant, constitutive of our geography, and so thus in some way constitutive of our national identity. And that's why I think threats to water are often perceived in Canada not just as practical problems, but to some degree as existential threats. And the debate over transboundary water exports and the illusions or delusions that we're sometimes subject to, I think it speaks to that myth. Over the past couple of decades, of course, threats to Canada's water and the need to dispel that myth have become more apparent. The media have had a field day. Many observers have chimed in and argue that the threats to our water are multiple and we need to do something about it. Let me just give you one example that we haven't touched on in any great degree, but we should. Drinking water quality on First Nations reserves. Over 75% of First Nations reserves across the country do not have reliable access to potable water. Over 100 of those communities live with permanent boil water advisories. Some of those have been in place for decades. Add to that the over 1,000 small and rural communities across the country, some of these are only half an hour's drive from major cities like Vancouver, that have water quality as bad as that in developing countries. And you start to get, in addition to water quality, tragedies like Walkerton, we start to get a sense of the picture with respect to drinking water governance in Canada. Part of the issue with respect to drinking water is the fact that we are the only developed country not to have legally enforceable drinking water standards. We only have guidelines. Not all provinces and territories have taken those up. So it's no wonder that commentators like the Senate's Standing Committee on Natural Resources have termed the governance of Canada's water shocking and unacceptable. And they've been echoed by lots of commentators, lots of the Flow Water Group are here today, the Council of Canadian Academies, the Auditor General's Office, the National Water Resources Institute, we could go on. What are those commentators saying? Well, they're arguing that there are two key issues. The first is that we don't adequately integrate. So let's back up, and why do we need to integrate water management? You often hear the argument that we need to do so. Well, water's a really messy resource to manage. Because it's a flow resource, it circulates through the hydrological cycle. It crosses jurisdictional boundaries. It's subject to multiple uses by upstream and downstream users. And it's critical to environmental and public health. So water managers need to be balancing competition between users at multiple scales, dealing with this geographical mismatch between hydrological boundaries and jurisdictional boundaries while ensuring public and environmental health. That's even before they're dealing with land use. And this slide is from Brad Stelfox, an amazing landscape ecologist out in Alberta. Map out agriculture. human settlements, transport, energy production, and transmission. And you get a sense of the very fragmented land base that we deal with in most of the country. People living in urban centers in Canada often tend to overlook the extensive and multiple uses to which the land base throughout a lot of Canada is subject. All of these uses have impacts on the local hydrological cycle. If we can't get to grips with them in an integrated manner, we cannot protect water quality or even deal with water quantity issues, particularly low flows for ecosystem uses. So we need to integrate. We're not doing a great job. Why? It's because in Canada we have one of the most decentralized water governance frameworks in the world. It's partly a consequence of our approach to resource governance under Canadian federalism, where fresh water is the responsibility of the provinces, as with other resources. Nonetheless, we've allowed that decentralization to go on to an acute degree. We've also allowed for a significant amount of variation. You know, various different water rights regimes, lots of different approaches to things like drinking water standards, and I could go on. Now, decentralization and variation can be, to some degree, appropriate in a country that's as biogeographically diverse and as large as Canada, although other large federations have not taken the same approach. The EU, Australia, the US, they're all much more harmonized in terms of water regulation than we are. And the reason they've done that is they're trying to avoid some of the key problems that we're grappling with because of our framework. And the first is simply the sheer complexity of governing water that crosses boundaries when we've got all these multiple standards in place. The second issue is coordination failures. Lots of examples you've heard about. The kerfuffle over the Great Lakes Annex Charter, I think a few years ago, is another great one that hasn't been discussed. So this complicated governance landscape, coordination failures, and a third issue is duplication of efforts, which is vastly inefficient. To give you just one example, right, a bit of shameless self-promotion here. Here's a report. Okay. We recently did a study of freshwater-related indicators across the country. Well, over the past 15 years, over 350 freshwater indicators have been created by provincial and federal governments. There's no central repository for data or even for the methods of these indicators. When confronted with the sheer number of indicators and their incommensurability, many local water managers throw up their hands. We surveyed a large number of them in last year, and they said, we simply don't use indicators. We'd love to. The system's not set up to allow us to do that. So we don't adequately integrate, and we don't adequately regulate. You've heard great examples of the regulatory vacuum across Canada. So I won't say much more about that, except to add one comment about the need for effective regulation. It has at least three elements: enforceable standards, monitoring that includes baseline data collection, and enforcement. The fourth aspect of that, which some people like to add, is the transparent sharing of regulatory information with the public. I can log on to a website in the UK and find out in real time what the water quality of my drinking water system is anywhere in the country. In some jurisdictions in Canada, the best source of information on drinking water quality is a small Vancouver-based NGO called EcoJustice. They produce these national report cards. I mean, the contrast is stark. This graph is produced by someone at the Alberta Research Council. It gives you an idea of the intensity of water, groundwater abstraction over the past century in Alberta. You've heard before the issues we have with the inadequacy of groundwater mapping and the issues with groundwater quality. I threw it up just to remind us again of the intensity of use of the land base and water resources with respect to resource extraction. Here I think are where our key regulatory issues really lie. We do actually have a handle on drinking water. We could do a bit better at it. But the frameworks are there. They're not really there for resource extraction. And we don't really have a sense of what to do about that. The fact that major development in the tar sands proceeded without water allocation frameworks in place, without a framework for dealing with tailings ponds. Similar story in northeastern BC right now with respect to natural gas development. Hydraulic fracturing, the injection of mix of sand steam and a brew of chemicals into shales to extract low-grade natural gas. That's ongoing without basically any monitoring or regulation, in contrast to the better, not perfect, but the better regulatory frameworks they have in the U.S. So we don't regulate. We've abdicated in a lot of jurisdictions regulatory functions. And we're an outlier. We're an exception. Most other countries do it better. Some do it much better. So why? I've given you some of the reasons. We do have a general tendency with environmental governance in Canada to pass the buck because of the structure of resource governance under Canadian federalism. The geographical concentration of our population and the thin population density does mean resources are thinly spread. So the U.S. has 1.5 million hydrometric monitoring stations. We've only got a few thousand, and very few in the north. We have not grappled with the economic and political pressures associated with resource extractive sectors. If you effectively regulate, not everyone's going to be happy, as Bob said. I mean, smart regulation is too smart for its own good, I think, in this sense. I mean, effective regulation does mean making people, and sometimes very unhappy, and limiting land use. Finally, the myth of water abundance. You've heard a lot about it. We're not the Kuwait of the world's water. If you remember only one thing from this conference, please remember we to have under 7% of the world's annual renewable fresh water supply. It's about equivalent to our land base, and it certainly doesn't mean, because a lot of that water is located in or flows to the north, that we have lots of excess. We can't be complacent. Other countries have woken up to this. The UK, for example, over the past 20 years has grappled with the fact that it's a water-scarce country. You wouldn't think it, given the permanent drizzle you seem to experience when you're there. Nonetheless, they have half the precipitation that Paris does. They have actually embarked on a sweeping set of legislative and policy changes that recognizes water-stressed areas, created very innovative mechanisms to deal with drought, very aggressive water conservation initiatives. Lots of other examples around the world of this, and we're a laggard. We weren't 40 years ago. The 1970 Canada Water Act and the suite of legislation that occurred in and around the Canada Water Act were world-leading. At the same time, we were one of the world leaders in water-related science. The federal government has not updated that legislation for 40 years. So we need to integrate. We need to regulate. We also need a new paradigm of water governance. Water professionals like to talk about integrated watershed resources management. That has way too many syllables to grab the general public. Here's another term I offer. We're working on a water security project at the moment, not in the sense of a narrow bioterrorist sense of security, but in a broad-based sense, you know, of integrating ecosystem health and human health and ensuring access to adequate quantities and qualities of water on a watershed basis. It's this sort of vision that we need to underpin any governance renewal in Canada. So I agree with Bob that we're going to be resuscitating some frameworks, borrowing from elsewhere, looking strategically at delegated watershed governance. Linda Nowlin will talk about that a bit later today. But unless we have this underpinning vision, I think we'll fall into the same traps we already have because of the barriers I identified earlier. There are lots of great examples, particularly at the provincial level in Canada, that we haven't heard a lot about. The source water protection initiatives in Ontario, at least as originally envisioned, were, I think, extraordinary. I mean, source water protection was all about this very broad-based approach to dealing with the need to protect water sources from multiple uses and could have, and may still, imply the insertion of water governance considerations into land use planning in such a way as to prioritize the protection of water sources and to really constrain land uses in some areas. Rob DeLow might talk a bit more about that later on as well. So there are lots of examples at the provincial level. And in dealing with those examples, I want to address a question we were raised for this panel. The question was, you know, what about the U.S.? And here I'm arguing, forget about the U.S. We're the greatest threat to our water. We're the greatest diverters of water in the world. We have, you know, some of the weakest water governance frameworks in the world. We need to get our own house in order. I'll finish with some more shameless self-promotion. This is really terrible. So this book brought together 28 water experts across Canada. It has a lot more information on the governance challenges and the solutions. The reason I throw it up, though, is it also ties in nicely to the presentation insofar as the proceeds of this book are going to water the waterkeepers. They're a national organization. You might know about them. They're eco-vigilantes. They get out there in their boats. They patrol the waters. If they catch polluters, governments or private companies or individuals, they try to prosecute. In many parts of Canada, they're our front line. They're the only ones who are defending our water sources. I think this is emblematic of the way we've abdicated collective responsibility for water in Canada. And if that's not the reality check message you take home, then I failed in my job. But I really want to emphasize the degree to which, and I hope the panelists will agree, we've got the science, we've even got the regulatory frameworks, but if we don't get the governance right, we won't have made progress. Thanks very much.